Hello and welcome to another episode of the Successful Home Ownership Show with your host Richard McKenzie out of the greater Cincinnati area. And we are First Inspection Services as far as the name of our home inspection company. We also do we do residential and commercial property inspections. And the episode we're going to be talking about today, the house, is a residential property. And it's not that old. It's only 15 years old. And it had a few idiosyncrasies that made it very interesting and why I chose to talk about this inspection. And so let's get started. And today's, this house was north of Cincinnati in one of the suburban kind of areas. And it was at a cul-de-sac, had a nice little pond behind it for the neighborhood. And it was raining at the time of the inspection, so that made it interesting walking around the yard. So just to let you know, with respect to inspections, we do like to start from the outside first and do everything outside, and then perhaps the garage, and then work our way into the first floor. If there's a second floor, this one did not have a second floor. It was a ranch and a pretty spacious basement. And then, so the basement was a large space, and we'll talk about that last. So we kind of do it that way. Now, I chose this house also because it had a lot of unique DIY items that caused me to go into my forensic analysis of the owner mode, which is trying to figure out what they did and why these DIY things were there, and the pros and cons of them, and what we can and can't do as inspectors, because we have to stick to a template that is orchestrated generally by much of the governing agencies or organizations like the American Society for Home Inspectors, the National Association for Certified Home Inspectors, and whichever state the inspector is in this case, the Ohio Home Inspection Law. So we really have to follow their template and be consistent with what we can and can't do. And just for a little overview of what is encompassed within that, the home inspection is a visual, non-invasive inspection of all the readily accessible areas of the home. And we have to use our common sense with respect to that. For example, if there's a master bedroom window or two windows behind the headboard of the master bedroom bed, we are absolutely not going to climb on somebody's intimate space on their bed to open those windows. That's just not going to happen. We'll take a picture of that to show that we weren't able to get to that. And we're not going to pull a refrigerator out or a stove out or empty out somebody's garage to be able to inspect every square inch of it. This is just not possible. Other things too. I mentioned it was raining. Well, this was a day that I had originally anticipated getting on this roof, but it was raining pretty good, and it was hard enough to climb on the ladder safely to get up to the gutter line to see everything. And fortunately, we had a really good view of a lot of the roof, if not all of it. So that was good. And we were able to determine the age of it, able to see what kind of wear was going on and if there were any issues. This house, for example, was 15 years old at the time of the inspection. So let's talk about what things we saw on the outside on a day that was raining, which has its pros. Obviously, there's cons, but pros, you're able to see the way water runs. You're able to see the patterns that it makes. So you can really assess drainage and grading and things of that nature. So on this house, for example, we were able to determine that because the house is built in 2009, and I was able to get on the ladder and look in the gutters and see the granule content, which after 15 years of a 25 to 30 year dimensional shingle fiberglass asphalt roof, you're going to have some granule loss, which was present in the gutters. And it wasn't enough to cause me a concern because there was a whole lot of good life left in this roof. Hopefully they can get 25 years, maybe even 30 out of it. So it's probably at the halfway point, perhaps a little bit over the halfway point. Things we also look for outside, unlevel concrete surfaces for sidewalks and so forth. So where the sidewalk actually intersected the driveway, there was an inch and a half, 2 inch drop on part of it, so we flagged that as a trip hazard. Is that easily fixable? There's a thing called slab jacking, concrete pumping, where they lift things up. It's not a cheap process. They basically pump grout underneath the concrete surface and it lifts it as it cures, rapid curing. So that might be something that is chosen to do. The front porch. Okay, so the yard slopes from the left, starting from the driveway down gently, and therefore the front porch being covered in a decently sized porch, the builder did not put a railing around, and there was at least two houses like across the street that had railings around them, so that's something that the buyer is probably going to add. And there was at least a foot and a half, 2 foot drop off parts of the front porch. So that is a hazard. All right, so let's talk about some other outside things. As we went around to the left, okay, and first we're looking at, as inspectors, we're looking at the garage openings. This one had a two-door garage and a one-car garage. So it had three garage spaces. And I'll get to the garage, which was perhaps the most interesting part of the inspection. I'll get to that in a little bit. That had some of the DIY, what in the world kind of forensic analysis is needed on this house. Okay, so we traversed around to the left, and I'm noticing that there's a lot of straw and mud and clay mud topsoil with alfalfa straw on it and grass seed planted. I'm thinking this person at this house may have had some exterior bushes. I didn't see vines. I'm going to say there were probably bushes that just kind of went haywire because the person at this house was more interested in what they were doing as a hobby than spending time outside. So I think probably somebody paid to have those bushes removed and soil put back, and therefore planting going on for grass seed. Because there were several areas around all four sides, actually three sides, three of the four sides of the house, that definitely had these areas which on a rainy day I had to kind of really make sure I wasn't slipping and falling. But those areas will take root and grass will grow. It just looks like a whole bunch of bushes were probably taken out that were just kind of gone haywire. So when I got to the left, I noted, okay, the air conditioner is original. It's 15. It's 50 degrees, 50 to 55 degrees outside at the inspection, so we certainly couldn't run that. But we were able to get the age of the AC, and it was definitely 15, so it's original. Remember that air conditioners as a central air unit, especially when it's not a heat pump. This is a straightforward central AC unit, 2.5 ton carrier brand, typically 15 to 20 years of these items. So we definitely advise the buyer to make sure they have a service and cleaning prior to closing to be able to determine the remaining life left in the unit, because you don't want to move in and have it die, you know, within a week, or if they move in the spring, which was the timing of this inspection. Actually, it's technically still winter, but you don't want to move in and have spring and summer and the air conditioner doesn't work. That would be a bummer. Now, near the air conditioner was a noteworthy item. What was it? Well, it was a natural gas generator. Okay, what do you do with that, Richard? Well, we don't run them, okay? We do make a note that it's in there. And I will say in this situation, there was limited knowledge about the house because it's sort of an estate kind of situation where the owner was not available and wouldn't be available to talk to. And so you really kind of get what you get. And any information about the house, you're probably going to have to hire somebody to kind of say, hey, this is what you've got. this is what you can do electric-wise to cut over when the generator is turned on. And by the way, Mr. and Mrs. Buyer, you really should have an electrician to further evaluate this stuff before closing to give you an idea of what you can and can't do and to test it. Yes, definitely you want to fire up the generator. We can't do that at the inspection. That's way beyond the scope of the inspection. And to probably do that annually, ongoing. I mean, if you don't have a storm, you don't want to sit there and say, we haven't had a bad enough storm for 3 years, but I never tested my generator. Well, even schools and hospitals test theirs out. So you want to make sure that that gets inspected, tested every year. And then also around in that area, there was the deck, and the deck was very well built. And under the deck was like a, well, it wasn't like, it actually was a lawnmower, riding lawnmower that was kind of sinking down in the mud. So that was kind of strange. But overall grading of the yard and the way the land laid and the swales, which are shallow paths of least resistance, I won't call it a ditch. A swale is a depression in the yard that is cuts a path, and it's made to be a path of least resistance for water to evacuate in the yard. Very simple mechanics for that. Walking around the deck area, noticing how well built it is, I will say that the top rails on the deck, as we climbed up the stairs and got on the deck, there were a couple observations there. One, the builder of the deck did not do crown up on the 2x6s. I think they were 2x6s, not 2x8s, for the top rails, so that there was at least one of them that had rotted. Everything else was in really great shape. And then this deck was covered with a roof that intersected the main house roof and then created an area. And by the way, there were no leaks, but it created an area where the space between the two roof lines and the new roof, I guess you can call them truss members or just roof members, it was filled in with a large gauge screen where the holes of the screen, probably bats and insects, wasps and bees and stuff could go in there. And you don't want that because you're not going to see what kind of activity is going on in there unless you put a spotlight in those areas. So I had suggested that he install another set of screen on top of that, which was a finer screen, which the air would get in there, which you want, but you don't want creatures to get in there. Okay, that being said, and there were a couple of oddball DIY things where underneath the deck there was a Romex wire run from one of the outlets to create a deck outlet on the surface of the deck, and that was not in conduit, which exterior wiring you do want in conduit, so that needs to be remedied. Not a real big item, but an item nonetheless. Continuing around the house, noticing that the grading is good. You know, there's areas that they definitely had taken out bushes and so forth. And I'm still having to be careful about where I'm walking. And the buyer is coming with me and he's walking around with me, and that's good. You want good interaction and he's asking good questions. There was one more thing on the deck. The fireplace was a vented gas ceramic log system. So it's not vent free, but it's vented to the outside, straight out the back. Where the deck was built, the flue pipe becomes an area that is only 3.5 feet off the ground, and where people could be walking if you're out on the deck in the winter and the fireplace is running, then that's a hot item that people can touch. So is there a better configuration that can be prescribed and installed that would be not accessible? Maybe put a metal cage around it, just something. Something needs to be done by a qualified fireplace technician to make that something that people are not going to touch and burn themselves on. Not to mention the carbon monoxide there. So that needs to be remedied. Okay, so going around to the side, we noticed that one of the spigots kind of spun around when you turned it on, and it just didn't do anything. It wasn't turned off, it just was like stripped and just didn't work. So that needs to be fixed. And that probably leads us to going inside the garage, which I was kind of itching to talk about to start with. All right, the garage was really interesting. As I mentioned, there was a one-car garage on the left and a two-car garage on the right with a separation wall. And in between those two bays was a glass window. What? A glass window in the garage? What in the world do you need that for? Well, it was also a wire tempered glass window. So if people wanted to watch probably this person doing their hobby, which there was a breaker for a 40 amp breaker for arc welding, which was labeled arc welder. Okay, what do you use arc welding for? Well, you can actually do a whole lot of stuff about merging two metals together and getting them at such a high temperature, like 6,000 degrees or so, to make those two metals merge and bond. And there was actually one example that was framed left in the garage. I'm wondering if it was made to kind of explain why this person did this for a living, or and it was a hobby. And I believe he did wrought iron artwork and then framed this stuff, and people put it on their walls. Maybe family members, maybe he sold it, I don't know, but it was really very interesting. And there was also a second breaker, and by the way, these breakers were off. So do you turn breakers on? No, we don't. That's beyond the scope, and we don't know why they're off, and we don't know if it's safe to turn them on. Therefore, we don't turn them on. Err on the side of caution and stay in your lane and stay within the scope of the inspection. So, there was also a electric furnace that was on the ceiling, one of those small type that you hang on the ceiling. So I guess if you're doing this during the winter and your art project of using arc welding is not generating quite enough heat at 6,000 degrees, you're going to need a heater from the ceiling. Now, I do understand that. The breaker was off, so we didn't turn it on. So that leaves those two items to be at least something that can be looked at by a licensed electrician when they're evaluating the generator as well. So we, at least that trip can be all done in one trip and one further evaluation appointment by that licensed electrician. And I would say qualified licensed electrician. Not every electrician messes with generators, so this is going to be one that's kind of specialized. Okay, so I digress back to talking about this garage. And so in between the two bays was this red rectangle on the concrete floor, and it was painted in a frame with lines on it that were red. And that's because it was the space you don't want to step on when you're lowering the elevator from the attic up above. What? You mean there was an elevator? Well, it's kind of like a mini grain elevator where you have a push button on and off, up and down. You had to turn the switch on next to the service door going into the house, so we turned that on. And after I had already gone up in the attic, which was an installed pull-down set of metal attic stairs, or ladder stairs, whatever you want to call it, folding, that replaced the scuttle opening that was the original attic entry. Okay, so you had this attic entry. When I went in there, I saw that this lift was held on by a winch, which is motorized, of course, motorized winch, and with a cable that lifts. So it definitely has a limit to its capacity, which we don't know. And because it's installed by these 2x6s that it's being held onto by the axle, which is also attached to the roof members of the garage roof, we don't know how much force, how much tension can be put on that, and what the load capacity it is for the roof members. So I don't have the answer to those, nor are we qualified to make such calculations, but that's something where finding that out from A, the current homeowners, that's your first try. And secondly, if that's not accessible, then maybe a structural engineer, somebody who can make those calculations and loads, is going to be needed. Nonetheless, it went up and down just fine. And it was really kind of cool. And the area in the attic, which was between the ceiling joist members and on top of them, were 2x6s screwed in. So this was really a storage area for this person's hobby, which probably was a whole lot of wrought iron ingot metal that was used for raw material for his hobby, which I believe was artistic welding into different shapes. And quite honestly, I would have liked to have seen more of his work, but that was not available. So that was really interesting. I was able to see a good part of the house attic as well, at least on the left side behind the garage. That area was readily accessible, easily seen in the attic. And then, of course, as I traversed the first floor and found the other attic entrance, I was able to look at that part of that attic as well. So that was pretty cool. Now, garages do tend to be interesting places because a lot of times there are electrical panels in them. That wasn't the case in this particular house. But the other things that we're doing in garages are testing the garage doors, determining if they're what types of garage doors they are, whether they're insulated or not insulated, and also I'll just say this about new houses, since we've inspected a lot of new houses lately, since there seems to be a shortage of new houses, particularly in the greater Cincinnati area. Sometimes the builders don't insulate the outside walls, and they leave them with just the drywall. They just leave them with the siding and the vapor barrier and so forth, the outside facing portion of the wall, and that can be pretty cold. So if you're buying a new house, do check into the garage, okay? And realtors, when you're listening to this, real estate agents, realtors, do ask about the outside walls on behalf of your client. Are they getting finished or not in the garage? It's really good to have that finished, because if you're spending time in your garage or even going out in the garage from the house, getting in your car is going to be that much warmer if those walls are finished and insulated. And when I say finished, I mean insulated, drywalled over, and maybe left with the drywall tape, and maybe not painted or finished completely, but at least you've got them insulated, and then you can worry about getting it painted in the future. But you really do want that done. Okay. So I digress, and so then we enter into the first floor, and we're inspecting the kitchen appliances, making sure the dishwasher runs fine, and we're checking all the other appliances for the kitchen, checking to see if we've got GFCI receptacles at the sink areas for the kitchen, and anything within 6 feet of the sinks, and you want to make sure that the ice maker's working. I mean, there's things, if the refrigerator has an ice maker water line, check to see if that's installed without pulling the refrigerator out. Also, looking on the floor around the refrigerator, are there moisture stains from previous or current leaks? Sometimes when you run an ice maker for a house that's been vacant for a while, or run to have a cup and get some water out, after a few seconds, you'll see a little pool show up on the bottom of the refrigerator on the floor. So we do really look at these things. Same thing with dishwashers. They have these gaskets at the bottom of the door where they meet when they close the door, and they're black. Black gaskets at the corner bottom areas. And when you close the door, those are supposed to keep water from seeping out. And a lot of times when the dishwasher's running, it'll start leaking. And you'll see it, so we'll stop it, and we'll push the drain cycle and just finish it off. And we don't finish it, we note that in the report. It needs a repair or replacement. Garbage disposals. If the house has been vacant for a while, these get seized up. Are we qualified to take that wrench that sometimes is on the bottom of the disposal or the bottom of the cabinet? Yeah, I mean, sometimes we can do that if we see it, but a lot of times it's just at its last leg and it's going to leak. And if we run water during the disposal and the disposal is running and the sink starts filling up, then we are not going to run the dishwasher because the drain is clogged up, which the dishwasher absolutely needs to drain when it's done, so we're going to say we couldn't run the dishwasher. I'm saying all these things just to give you an idea of what we do and what the logical steps are when we're doing an inspection and thinking through all the things that we can and can't do. And we want to explain those. So is it better for you to be at the inspection? Yes. Real estate agents, is it better for you to attend part of the inspection? Absolutely. Especially if you're a new agent and you never go to inspections, here's how it helps you. So this is a freebie here. Well, actually, the whole podcast is free, so that's a moot point. But nonetheless, all right, so let's say you're a new agent and you don't go to inspections. I realize that some brokers don't like their agents to go to inspections because it exposes them to legal stuff. But for your own sales pipeline as an agent, if you don't go to inspections, how are you going to know to recognize things when you see a house and you're all excited because there's a house in that neighborhood and you know they're hard to come by and you want to put a contract on it, and that and then the inspection comes and the house just falls apart and the contract falls apart because there's so many things wrong with the house? And what if you had been able to notice like three or four of those major items and not put a contract on that house and not had to start your sales pipeline over again and start over? Okay, not every house should have a contract made on, because just because there's a house available in the price point for your client and in that neighborhood that they want to be in doesn't mean that that needs your contract. Let somebody else make that mistake. So when you go to inspections, you learn so much. When you see an inspector say something about a particular area of the house in some area, you're going to learn, oh man, that's what it looks like when that is like that. And that is a big deal. That's a $5,000 item. Okay, and also know, and here's another freebie, know what your client's out-of-pocket limit is. If you do not know what your out-of-pocket limit is, then they could be buying a house that things aren't going to get fixed that exceed their out-of-pocket limit. And therefore, how can they afford that house? How are they going to stay in contract on that if those items exceed their out-of-pocket limit? If they can only spend $3,000 of things from their out-of-pocket limit, meaning, and when I say that, I mean things that the seller does not fix, that they have to take on themselves to fix and need to fix in order to live in that house safely and comfortably. In other words, they really need to get fixed ASAP. They're not things that they can defer that maintenance. Like, let's say if the air conditioner doesn't work, but too bad, the house is as is. Well, an air conditioner might cost $3,000 to $4,000. Well, their out-of-pocket limit's $2,000. So that math doesn't work. That's not going to get to the closing table. Unless they want to live for a season with high humidity and no air conditioner. Okay, do you see how that works? So therefore, not every house deserves a contract. So make sure you go to inspections so you can get educated and recognize things when you see them. I have actually inspected houses where the buyer's agent and the buyer did not know that the air conditioner had been stolen and it was gone. That shouldn't happen. That means you didn't walk outside. By the way, when you buy a house, you own the outside and the inside. So you don't just go inside on a renovated flipped house and say, oh great, it's got granite countertops and stainless steel appliances. Well, yeah, but there's no air conditioner. Yeah, but the house is covered in vines. Yeah, but there's a tree that's right up against the house, and that's a $4,000 tree to remove that absolutely needs to be removed because it's interfering with the power line and it's right up against the corner, and it's causing a crack on the rear foundation wall of the basement that you didn't go in because you got distracted by the granite countertop and stainless steel appliances. So this all works together. So you've got to look at the whole house, notice things, and then decide whether you want to put a contract on the house or not. So you're going to, when you're showing houses, first walk outside the house around it, then go in the house, then immediately I would go to the basement, and I wouldn't even look at the kitchen yet. Then do the kitchen and bedrooms and all that stuff last. Because if you eliminate the chance of you putting a contract on the wrong house, you're going to make more money. Because you're not going to waste time on things that don't make you money. Because once you spend that time, I have not seen somebody invent new time yet. You don't get that time back. All right? And your time is valuable. All right. So where did I leave off? Well, I left off on the kitchen appliances, finishing that, checking out the bathrooms, trying to figure out where the GFCI reset is for the bathrooms, if they're all linked together, and that's all good, that's fine. Testing out the fireplace, which fortunately in this case they left the gas on, so we were able to turn on the light switch and turn that on. Now it did have a recirculating fan that did not work. We did not hear that running, so that's a repair that's needed. And I mentioned that there was another attic access, which generally is in the master bedroom closet in a lot of cases. And sure enough, for this particular case, that's where it was also. So we were able to see inside there, making sure in the attic that there's enough insulation, making sure in the attic that there's enough ventilation. When we go in an attic, we want to feel a little bit of a tiny breeze or just feel some air movement in some way. And we're looking all around on all the members and the decking to make sure there's no mold growing on it. And yes, we have seen that. Making sure we're not seeing any stains. If we see any mouse tunnelings in the fiberglass or cellulose insulation, we'll note that. That's not really part of the inspection, but we'll note it. And the more out in the country you are and the more trees that you have around you, you're going to have that. And sometimes we see snake skins in attics. Why do you have snake skins in an attic? Because rat snakes and corn snakes and other snakes that eat mice, and if there's a nice warm attic, that they're going to want to get in there. So the better ventilation you have in your attic, the less number of animals you're going to have in your attic, because it's an inhospitable place. So if it's uncomfortable to them, then nobody's going to want to hole up there and live there, and that makes it good for you. All right. So then we worked our way down to the basement, and in the basement we had the electrical panel with the generator switchover sub panel, which we did not test. We're not going to switch on and off breakers. We're not going to switch and cut over the generator either. Test that out. But we're going to recommend to the buyer to have that checked out before closing. We're looking at the water heater, taking the age off of it, the age off of the furnace, making sure that's running well. Even if it's blazing hot outside in August, we're going to run the furnace because you can run that pretty much anytime. Checking the moisture levels of the basement walls, looking for the emergency shutoff, pulling the covers off of the electrical panel and furnace. We're also going to be looking for the water shutoff and what type of material that is. Is it leaking? Is it polybutylene? Is it Blue Max? What type of material is it? Is it copper? Is it lead? For this house being 15 years old, it was copper coming in and then CPVC piping pretty much everywhere else after that. That's pretty typical for this age house. All the basement walls were nice and dry. Tested with our moisture meter, and the basement did not smell musty. There was really no sense of mold being down there, elevated mold. The sump pump operated fine, and it was really a good basement inspection. and therefore the major finding for this particular 15-year-old house was really just making sure about the generator and all of the ins and outs around it, and the DIY stuff that was in the garage for the person's hobby. So overall, the house was built very well. We were able to explain that and convey that to the buyer, that they're getting a very solid house. And the big four that are involved with the house, the roof, structure, air conditioner, and furnace, of those big four, the air conditioner was probably the closest to the time of replacement, which would be the largest outlay of money to replace it. But not of the roof, of course, but the roof, I'm just saying, had a lot more life left in it, so you're not really concerned about that at this point. But the house did really well. It was a good inspection, good interaction with the client. He asked a lot of good questions. And, so that's going to be it for the Successful Home Ownership Show for this episode. And I really do appreciate you listening. Just as a reminder, if you want to ask any questions, it's richard@firstinspections.com. That's spelled with the number one S-T, not F-I-R-S-T. And inspections is plural. And we are at www.firstinspections.com. And until our next episode, thank you for listening.